Hello and welcome to Solutions. This is the fourth episode of our fourth series of podcasts for solution-focused hypnotherapists, and I'm Cathy Eland.
And I'm Trevor Eddles, and we're both experienced solution-focused hypnotherapists.
Today we're going to take a look at positive psychology and some techniques we can use with our clients.
Right, so positive psychology began as a new domain of psychology in 1998 when Martin Seligman chose it as the theme for his term as president of the American Psychological Association. He felt that psychology at that time tended to focus on mental illness and negative thinking and behavior.
Okay, now positive psychology uses scientific understanding and effective intervention to aid in the achievement of a satisfactory life. Its focus is on personal growth, happiness, well-being, and purpose. According to positive psychology, happiness is improved and affected in a large number of different ways. For example, social ties with a partner, family, friends, and wider networks through clubs or social organizations. As we suspected, happiness increases with increasing financial income, but it reaches a plateau, and no additional pay rises make you any happier. It's also worth noting that physical exercise correlates with improved mental well-being.
And as well as helping people change their negative style of thinking about other people, their future, and themselves, positive psychology also helps families and schools to allow children to grow, and it can be used to create workplaces that aim for satisfaction and high productivity.
In addition, positive psychology focuses on positive emotions, that's being content with your past, being happy in the present, and having hope for the future. Positive individual traits, your strengths and virtues, and positive institutions, strengths to improve a community of people.
One problem people often have with everyday life is remembering the good parts. We've all done it. Most of the day was good, except for an hour in the afternoon when things went wrong. And that's the bit we remember and tell people. One way to get an accurate record of how clients feel during a typical day is to have people use beepers to remind them to write down the details of how they currently feel. Hopefully, not irritated because a beeper has just gone off.
But basically, this illustrates the difference between the experiencing self and the remembering self. Daniel Kahneman identified a cognitive bias that he called the peak end effect. What that means is that people remember the dramatic parts of the day and the end. So try not to let your clients leave you without giving them a few minutes of a pleasant experience, particularly on a bad day, because that will colour how they remember the whole day.
Yes, good thinking.
Yes.
Martin Seligman came up with the acronym PERMA, PERMA, for positive emotions, engagement, relationships, meaning and purpose, and accomplishments. And that was his acronym for well-being. Positive emotions include happiness, joy, excitement, satisfaction, pride, and awe. Engagement refers to involvement in activities that draw and build on a person's interest. What
Mihai Csikszentmihalyi.
called flow or being in the zone. It involves passion for and concentration on the task at hand. Relationships are about receiving, sharing, and spreading positivity to others. Meaning or purpose drives people to continue striving for a desirable goal. Accomplishments are the pursuit of success and mastery, which sometimes may not result in positive emotions, meaning, or relationships.
Okay, so you can see that PERMA can apply to all aspects of our client's life. They need to remember when they felt positive emotions about things during the day, that's experiencing self, and that's why asking what's been good is such a positive technique. Clients can spend large parts of the day in the flow or totally engaged, and it might be when they're solving a problem. and they're completely absorbed in the task, or when they need to use their knowledge and experience to identify a solution. And that could be solving a Sudoku problem or a crossword or watching a football match. And when they're chatting positively to family and friends, they're ticking the relationship box. Meaning is what drives us to achieve our goals, which could be to become a non-smoker because they see themselves as a non-smoker. And finally, accomplishments makes us study to pass exams or learn to drive or play a musical instrument better.
Yeah, and all these things can happen every day to our clients. And if we did measure every 10 minutes how happy our clients were, we'd probably find that their experience of each day was actually quite good rather than perhaps how they say they remember it. And of course, we should make sure that they leave a hypnotherapy session on a high point, or whatever that might be. And maybe we could encourage them to run or cycle to our sessions. If we use positive psychology techniques to help make clients happier, we are also making them more confident and better able to deal with the world.
There are plenty of techniques used by positive psychologists that can be borrowed by solution-focused hypnotherapists to help their clients. You're probably familiar with some of them. Anyway, here are some really good examples.
Okay, three good things. Consciously spending a few minutes each day focusing on some of the good things that have happened and can help people to start notice what goes right in their lives rather than, like too many people, simply focusing on what goes wrong.
Here's what to do. Every night for a week before they go to bed, they should think back over their day and remember three good things that happened. These things can be things that went well, or things that they enjoyed doing, or things that they were grateful for. And they can be small things, for example, enjoying a cup of coffee, or big things, things that are important to them, like that big lottery win, or anything in between. They should write down the three good things for that day and reflect on their role in them. This contributes to a person's perceived sense of control. They should stop after a week for maximum effect. That's been found by Sheldon and Lyubominsky in 2004 to increase happiness and decrease depressive symptoms.
Okay, second one, gratitude journal. Keeping a gratitude journal has been shown to increase well-being, optimism, life satisfaction, and happiness, and reduce negative feelings, depression, worry, body dissatisfaction, and physical symptoms.
So here's what to do. Your client should write down what they are grateful for. That way they can review what they've written and see all the good things in their life. They need to be specific. The more detailed they are, the better. Focusing on the people they are grateful to is more effective than writing about things. So they should elaborate the details of one thing rather than making a shallow list of many things. Recording events that are unexpected is good because they elicit stronger feelings of gratitude. And the more your client engages with the journal, the more that they're going to get out of it. They should be consistent and set aside 15 minutes at a specific time of day to write down in their journal. They shouldn't overdo it. Writing one to three times per week is more effective than writing daily.
Okay, number three, gratitude visit. This technique gives an immediate happiness boost that lasts a few weeks before it gradually gets less.
Here's what to do. Your client should think of someone they're really grateful to for something they've done in the past. The client then writes them a letter describing what they did for the client and how it affected them and their life. The client should arrange to meet the person, preferably at their house. And when they meet, your client should tell the person that they have something they want to say. The client should then stand or sit in front of the person and read their letter out loud. Afterwards, your client can give the person a copy of the letter to keep. And if that sounds too embarrassing, they could simply just send the letter to the person.
Okay, number four then, random acts of kindness. Random acts of kindness make the receiver feel better and they make the giver feel happier. And if you can do several in the same day, that's even better. It's also a good idea to vary the acts so that they remain fresh and meaningful. That's according to Liebominsky in 2008.
Okay, so here's what to do with this one. The acts can be for people your client knows, or they can be for people in general, e.g., giving blood, and they can do acts of kindness for people they don't know, e.g., help someone struggling to carry something heavy. They could start by making a list of the small actions they can take, e.g., offer to babysit for an hour or take an older relative down to the pub for a chat. If the person doesn't get to see very many people, or they could start by thinking about the people they know and what they could do for them. They could have a kindness day, perhaps once a week, and try to perform at least five different acts of kindness for different people. Or perhaps they could think about kind things they could do with friends or family or even neighbours. Obviously, as long as you like them, people trying this technique could meet up and swap ideas and support each other.
Nice idea. Active constructive responding. According to Gable et al., 2004, what distinguishes good relationships is how people respond to good news in their partner's life. They identified four types of responses to good news. There's passive constructive, oh, that's nice, and move on. There's active destructive. Have you thought about how much time you'll be warm instead of being with us? There's passive destructive. Oh, is dinner ready? And there's active constructive. Step one is listening, asking questions, and being interested. Step two is celebrating and capitalizing on the success.
And here is what to do. Your client should start by listening to what their partner and others they are close to are saying to them, whether that's at work or at home, and try to respond in an active, constructive way.
Next, we've got identifying signature strengths. People are often advised to play to their strengths. There are benefits for doing this, including elevated vitality and motivation, a greater sense of direction, and higher probability of goal attainment, not to mention increased self-confidence and productivity. That's Clifton and Anderson, 2001 and 2. Hodges and Clifton, 2004, Peterson and Seligman, 2004.
And here's what to do. Your client should find out what their strengths are. There's the VIA classification of strengths and virtues. That's Peterson and Seligman, 2004. There's Gallup's Strengths Finder. And there's the Centre for Applied Positive Psychology's, or in brackets CAPP, Realise 2. They can do a survey online at authentichappiness.org to find their signature strengths. And once they know their strengths, they should try to use them more over the next week. It will improve their mood in the short term. And that's from Seligman et al., 2005.
However, improving your weaknesses doesn't seem to do any good.
Really? One way to make the positive effect more long-lasting is to look at the top five strengths and use them in a new way over the next week. Again, that's Seligman et al., 2005. They can use the strength in a new setting or with a new person.
Next one is called savoring. It's very easy to eat food while working on your laptop or while watching TV, or you might find yourself drinking tea while talking on the phone or engaged in a meeting. One way to increase your well-being is to actually savour what you're doing.
Here's what to do to develop your savouring as a skill. Share your good feelings with others. Take a mental photograph of being acutely aware in the moment with intentions to remember the mental photograph later. Sharpen your sensory perceptions by being attentive to the present moment. compare the outcome to something worse. Another one is get absorbed in the moment. Count your blessings, that's giving thanks. Avoid killjoy thinking by looking, yes, on the bright side. Communicate positively with others by behaving positively, e.g., positive facial expressions, and limit time is too fleeting perceptions.
Yeah, good ones. Exercise. Exercise reduces anxiety and stress. It improves cognitive functioning as well as physical functioning, and it makes you happy. Again, according to Lyubomirsky, 2008.
And I'm sure you'd like to know how to do it. So here's what to do. Take a 30-minute brisk walk. Even better, take the walk in the countryside. Join an exercise class. Even better, chat to others in the class before and after the session. Actually, any other form of exercise. Exercise is physically and cognitively good for you.
Yes, that's the old BDNF stuff, isn't it? Anyway,
It is.
next one is called Best Possible Self.
Here's what to do. Write down what the desired successful future version of you will be like when you have achieved everything you want, and write down the vivid details over a 4-week period. Now, this enhances optimism and causes better integration between one's priorities and goals, and this makes people feel happier.
Okay, next one is positive reminiscence.
Here's what to do. For 10 minutes, twice a day for a week, think about positive memories. Just thinking about a positive memory in great detail can make people happier.
And the next one, a wonderful day together.
And here's what to do. Plan a wonderful day for you and someone else. Plan from the first thing in the morning until bedtime and include activities that you will both enjoy. Decide when the day will happen and then have the day and savour each of the chosen activities.
Okay, next one is called Cuddles. Friedrichsen, 2009, came up with the idea of plugging in when she needs a hug to recharge her batteries. The hug should be front to front and last closer to a minute than a second. Psychotherapist Virginia Satir said, "We need four hugs a day for survival. We need eight hugs a day for maintenance. We need 12 hugs a day for growth." Hugging increases levels of oxytocin, which may have beneficial effects on the health of your heart and more. A 20-second hug, along with 10 minutes of hand-holding, can reduce the harmful physical effects of stress, including its impacts on your blood pressure and heart rate. This is probably because hugging lowers the level of cortisol.
Here's what to do, although I think it's probably quite obvious. Find someone who likes you, and preferably you like them, and hug them for at least 20 seconds.
Yeah, good one. Yes. Next one's called time. Most people seem to be running a time deficit, running from one activity to another. In 2006, the Oxford English Dictionary found time to be the most frequently used noun.
And here's what to do. Spend time with other people, an hour or a whole day, just chatting or gardening or playing or whatever you want. The activity will make them feel happier and it will make you feel happier too.
Life summary. At some time in the future, one of your grandchildren may want to know what you were like. This is your chance to tell them.
And here's what to do. Write a one-page summary of your life as you'd like it to be known to your grandchild. Include a description of your values, your personal characteristics, and your contribution to humanity. Come back and review what you've written after a few days. What changes might you want to make in your life so that your summary is a more accurate reflection of your life?
Okay, worry time. Obviously, as we all know, it's impossible not to worry.
And here's what to do if worrying gets somewhat out of hand. Set aside a time in the day, half an hour at 7:30 p.m., for example, when you can worry. It must be the same time and in the same place. and don't allow yourself to worry at any other time.
Worry Journal. Emma Bombeck said that worry is like a rocking chair. It gives you something to do, but never gets you anywhere. According to The Worry Cure, 7 Steps to Stop Worrying from Stopping You by Robert L. Leahy, 85% of what subjects worried about never happened. And with the 15% that did happen, 79% of subjects discovered either they could handle the difficulty better than expected, or the difficulty taught them a lesson worth learning. This means that 97% of what people worry about is a waste of time.
Here's what to do. Write down your worries in a journal. Cross out all the ones that have already happened because there is nothing at all you can do about them. Then cross out all the ones that are trivial and come up with a plan to deal with the rest. What a great idea.
We're now on to the three question process. This idea is taken from Tal Ben-Shahar's book Happier, 2007.
And here is what to do. Ask yourself the following questions. What gives me meaning? What gives me pleasure? What are my strengths? And take time to reflect on your answers. The next step is to find out where the answers overlap. Now, this might take a little time, and then do more of them to make you happy.
Seems so obvious, doesn't it?
Interesting.
Learned optimism. According to Martin Seligman, anyone can learn optimism. The process consists of a simple method to train a new way of responding to adversity. It begins with the Ellis ABC model of adversity, belief, and consequences.
Here's what to do. Adversity. Think about a difficult situation, e.g., I don't know, somebody cuts you up in traffic, and write it down. Second one, belief. What do you think about that situation? I.e., I can't believe that idiot was so rude and selfish, and write down your thoughts. Thirdly, consequence. How did your thoughts affect you? For example, are you overcome with anger? Yelling profanity at the other driver. So write down what they made you feel and do. And Seligman added, disputation, which is looking for evidence to counter what you're thinking. For example, am I overreacting? I don't know what his situation was. Maybe he's on the way to pick up his daughters from a piano recital and is running late. I'm sure I have cut up many people in the past without meaning to do so. So I should not really cast the first stone. I am not in a hurry anyway. And what other explanations are possible? And just jot these down. And finally, energization. When you think about things differently, that affects how you feel. And that affects the outcome in future similar situations. So one should celebrate the positive feelings.
Okay, and now moving on to using appreciative inquiry in a therapy situation. Now, appreciative inquiry, or AI as they call it, starts by looking at the best of what currently exists in order to imagine what could be, followed by designing a desired future state that is so compelling that people want to move towards it. So rather than asking what's wrong, which is obviously problem focused, it starts by asking what's right, which is more solution focused. An example question to ask your client would be, tell me about the best part of your day yesterday. Not only does it focus their attention on positives rather than the more usual negatives, clients may even notice a difference in how they felt when considering the answer. Some people experience a greater sense of calm or joy than if they were only recalling what happened during the day. Savoring good experiences, apparently, is one key to happiness.
Okay, now the 4D model of AI was developed by Cooper Ryder and Whitney in 2005, and its four steps are discovery, dream, design, and destiny. Now, during the discovery stage, the client should be asked questions identifying and detailing their positive core. And this information includes about their family and work. This is meant to generate a dialogue about the root causes of their success. Some questions to ask include, what do you think is your core factor or value, which you wouldn't be the same without?
Well, you can ask, if you had three wishes for yourself, what would they be?
You might ask, what achievements are you most proud of?
Or who are the important people in your life?
What have been your best experiences with blah, blah, blah?
What do you value about dot 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 yourself, your relationship with dot dot dot?
What situation is the problem most or least likely to occur?
How have you attempted to solve the problem?
What other strategies might you try?
How do you know that you've been successful?
Yeah, good one. And in the dream stage, clients build on what's good already, the positive resources they have, and any new ideas that come out of the discovery stage to create a vision of how they will be in the future.
That's followed by the design stage, which takes the vision from the dream stage and works out the steps needed to get from here to there. This may involve challenging the status quo. It helps the client to have a clear idea of their goal.
And finally, the destiny stage is all about implementing the steps identified in the design stage. The client becomes responsible for taking the steps to achieve the dream or the goal. Their decisions and actions must move them towards their dream.
Our job is to help them to take the necessary steps.
I think using or suggesting that our clients use some of these positive psychology techniques can be very useful.
Absolutely. There are some great ideas there. Anyway, moving on. Next time, we'll be looking at stress.
Stress? Until then, it's goodbye from me, Cathy Eland.
And it's goodbye from me, Trevor Eddles.
And we will see you next time. So bye.
Bye.
Bye.